This is Field Agent Carlisle Wilkinson. I've come here to find what was reported to be a very strange disappearance, but I've found even worse things than that. Anomalous things. Whatever this is, it's upsetting. Unsettling. It's a podcast episode that was recorded and released somehow without the host being present. I'm not sure if it's the machine, the microphone, or some ambient sound causing this to occur. For all I know, I could be recorded on a very podcast right now. I have to keep investigating. This could be anything, but it could be dangerous. Reporting in, this is... Wait, I'm not on a news broadcast, am I? Hold on. Let me make a note here. Might have the effect of making it sound like you're on a news broadcast. This was Carlisle Wilkinson, agent for the...
I'm connecting to the internet.
Internet.
Networking software.
World Wide Web.
The web.
Computer today.
Computer.
Computer.
NetSurfer Pro.
It's spooky month.
Yeah.
Gotta do like a spooky month theme.
Yeah, it's the time where the leaves are becoming orange, the pumpkins are becoming orange, and the candy is becoming orange because it's all candy corn. My favorite, personally.
We are children of the candy corn.
True.
New parody right there. Anyone can use that. It's in a Creative Commons.
Yeah, it's open source.
Yeah.
Hang on, I'm checking my notes here. NetSurfer Pro? Oh, sorry, NetSpooky Pro.
Ooh,
a whirlwind ride through the spooky web.
Hold on, whirlwind white.
A whirlwind white.
Through the spider's web.
Ah.
This is our first time doing a Halloween theme. Isn't that wild?
Yeah, we've never done this long. Like, yeah, we've done things that are, like, kind of spooky throughout other episodes, but this is the first actual Halloween, like... thing we've done ever. I really hope that this episode doesn't get lost.
Anyways, I'm Matthew Marissa.
I'm of course your co-host Galen Wilson.
And I need to be clear, by the way, this is the second time. Oh wait, you didn't hear the first time. But my last name is not Marissa.
Oh yeah, I've done this a couple times where I've introduced myself as Galen Wilson, which is my first and last name.
And what's your middle initial, and what's your social security number?
And the three wacky numbers on the back of my mom's credit card.
Yeah. Yeah, we're gonna give you all of that if you stick around to the end. It's like a little bonus treat.
Yep, that's the post-credits scene.
Mm-hmm. Much like in Captain America, when he shows up at the end and Nick Fury's like, Captain America, I need the three numbers on the back of your credit card. And Captain America says, I don't have a credit card.
Yeah, Captain America goes, what's a credit card? I'm sorry, I am from the 1940s. I bought a house with cash.
Yeah, so anyways.
So speaking of...
I know we're talking about very, very interesting things right now, but yeah, I guess speaking of government agents, like Captain America...
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, so this is something that I feel like when we first started the podcast, we were like, we're going to have to do an episode on this eventually.
Oh, absolutely.
And it spiraled into, we're going to have to do a spooky month about this eventually, because we need more than one episode to talk about this.
Yeah, so this first of the episodes, of the three fun episodes you're going to be getting this spooky season... is going to be a general overview of a very important and very foundational piece of internet fiction.
Foundational. Yeah.
See what I did there?
I think, like, if you're familiar with this, you will already know that this has been a major part of internet, like, media, as well as sort of the modern era of horror media. I think there is a lot of things nowadays that owes its existence to the SCP Foundation, which of course stands for the Shitcock Penis Foundation.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
No, the Secure Contain Protect Foundation, as it's called. I think that leads us directly to the fact corner, then.
The fact corner.
Okay, so... pretty much the only thing that I specifically know, which I think is the thing that a number of people familiar with the SCP Foundation know, is that the first SCP was SCP-173, which was a little blurb on 4chan, basically. It was just a little flash fiction thing, essentially.
Yeah.
And, like, it, you know, described this strange, anomalous thing that can, like, snap necks if you're not looking at it. And, essentially, the SCP Foundation from there kind of blossomed. This one little piece of flash fiction inspired a whole damn wiki.
Yeah, so it began on 4chan's X board, which is their, like, supernatural board.
Yeah, paranormal, I believe, is the tag, not tag.
What about paranatural? That's a good webcomic slash web novel. So, but you, as you mentioned, yeah, it started with an image of a statue, which was the statue Untitled 2004 by Izumi Kato, and the blurb describing a statue that, if you look at it, will make it very angry, and it will chase you down and snap your neck. Pretty much teleporting to you to snap your neck, nothing personnel.
Yeah. It only moves when not directly looked at, and the blurb kind of describes, well, the containment procedures of, like, anytime a cleaning occurs, you need to have no fewer than 3 D-class personnel inside, staring at it so that cleaning can occur.
And we'll explain what all of this means.
Yeah.
So, the SCP Foundation is not really a government agency. Their ties to the government are vague. They're an international agency, a very Men in Black, Area 51, X-Files-inspired agency that exists in fiction to, like, contain anomalies and protect the world from devastation, to unite all peoples within our nation.
Well, they don't really do a whole lot of uniting all peoples within our nation.
But they do try their best to capture things.
Yes.
Yeah. The idea is that there's all these supernatural phenomena that are real, and the SCP tries to contain them. I say tries because a running theme from the very start was that they cannot really be contained. These things are dangerous, and they suck ass. But eventually, all of these were compiled and posted onto a wiki in 2008, which then had to move to a different wiki website because the first one shut down.
Aww.
And then, since then, it has been on the same wiki.wiki, the SCP wiki. Essentially, each page is a short story, if you will, describing in a very clinical, scientific manner, as you said, the, like, containment procedures, as well as the description, the properties, and any other facts about these objects. Eventually, though, they went on to add also just, like, SCP tales, which are more or less just short stories in a more narrative format, usually of the people working for the Foundation dealing with anomalies. There are some that deal with anomalies themselves, but usually it's the more humanoid anomalies. Of course, since this was connected to 4chan, a lot of the early stuff was bad, and a lot of it got removed in 2009 through what was the mass decommissioning. Decommissioning became a canon way of describing SCPs that have been deleted from the wiki, as, like, essentially they have stopped whatever was anomalous about this thing. It no longer is relevant to the Foundation. Since the 2008 and 2009 era, it's become huge across multiple languages, inspired a number of, like, other books, a lot of YouTube videos, a lot of different types of media, a lot of video games. I think one of the big breakouts was, I believe, 2012, when SCP Containment Breach was released.
Yes, this is the one that I was going to mention. SCP Containment Breach was a video game that, like you said, I think very heavily popularized the Foundation among a new audience, where the idea is you are a D-class personnel, we'll get to that in a moment, who is part of the, like, three-man squad going into 173's containment, and then some shit goes down, and so you have to run the fuck out of there before, you know, the rebar statue kills you, and the gameplay is essentially wandering around the facility, trying to dodge 173 and, in later updates, other SCPs, while keeping yourself alive and, you know, getting out of the Foundation is kind of the ultimate goal. Because you are in the middle of a containment breach. Who would have guessed?
Right. That was a huge one for popularizing it. A ton of YouTubers like Markiplier and other YouTubers that were popular I don't really want to say the name of. Yeah, that guy is a good one. Played the game, and the SCP Foundation as a whole got pretty big from there. The other main notable thing to happen with the SCP wiki is that in 2022, a Russian guy tried to copyright and trademark the SCP Foundation and its logo, and it ultimately ended with the Russian SCP wiki getting closed, like the Russian language one.
Yeah, I don't really know what the deal with that was. Apparently, like, he lost one case and then was still granted the copyright or something. It was a really weird instance, and everyone hated it. And yeah. Kind of copyright trolling. But SCP has tons of articles. It's worth noting that currently we are in the 8,000s. Every SCP has a number. The difference, though, is that the thousands are more generations and not actual numbers.
Yeah.
So even though we have SCP-8888, we do not have 8,888 individual SCPs. It's more like you choose, you get a number somewhere within the thousand era that you are in. So the earliest ones all have 2 to 3 digit numbers, like 55, 40, 45, 173,
682.
Mm-hmm. And all of these are in like the original era. A lot of these older ones can be kind of hard to go back to, partially because some of them are really boring and stupid, and they're just like, this is a thing that kills you. This is a spooky spider.
Yeah, SCP Foundation goes through a couple of different arcs on its own, and like, without getting deep into it, because admittedly, I also feel a little out of my depth even saying it, the early SCPs... Early SCPs from, like, the original three-digit era to, I'm gonna say, like, the 3,000s, maybe 4,000s. I don't have the most experience. It's a lot of, like, guy who kills you. And the SCP Foundation itself is very much like, we have a gun that causes you to, like, causes you to freeze in place. Let's shoot 5 people with it and see what happens.
Yeah, there's like, a common theme that the SCP Foundation is extremely unethical and shitty.
And that gets lessened in later ones. That gets really deeply analyzed in later ones as well. But, like, SCP Foundation goes through a bit of an arc where the later SCPs are a little more, like, SCP as a means of, you know, protecting humanity, rather than, hey, we have this weird VHS tape that kills someone every time we play it. Well, we should play it 7 times and try to track down who dies.
Yeah, I think when used well, a lot of SCP writers will touch on themes of scientific overreach, of having too much curiosity, or like, sort of approaching it from the perspective of, like, unethical science experiments done in the past.
Yeah.
Things like the monkey baby Stanford prison experiment, which, you know. But that's, like, as far as themes go. I think also just content-wise, there's a lot of shock value or shock stuff in the early SCPs.
Yes.
There's a lot of dead kids.
Yeah.
A lot of, like, this thing killed a kid, or this is a kid that... I think, like, I don't remember which one it was, but there's an early one that's, like, a girl that has reality-bending powers, and they decide to put her in a coma.
Yeah.
And, like, it's, like, it feels like it was made just so they could set up a situation where they put a kid into a coma. And, like, it doesn't really justify it, and as a work of art, it doesn't really mean much beyond being shocking.
I've famously said on this very podcast, I don't give a shit about dead kids, and that's been my opinion for many, many a year, specifically in regards to, of course, fiction. If you're going to kill a kid, you have to make me feel something about the kid first. You can't just be like, you know, and I killed 7 kids and stuffed them in robots. I think FNAF actually does it somewhat well sometimes, but, you know, putting that aside. Like, if you're going to do a FNAF, if you're going to do a Petscop, if you're going to do a This Also Killed 7 Kids, it has to do something. It has to feel,
you know,
some way.
With Petscop, I think Mike Hammond is really interesting because... You get the, that's a dead kid, in, like, episode 1.
Yeah.
But I feel like you actually care more about him as the series progresses.
Yeah.
It really starts, like, nonchalant in the way Paul's reaction adds to that. He's not particularly shocked by it either. I feel like, again, this is tied to the 4chan-ness, is that they're trying to be, like, edgy and shocking just for the sake of being shocking.
Yeah.
Because the internet was like an unlegislated, unregulated place for a lot of them. and they viewed that as, like, the ultimate toilet.
I do want to specifically say as well that, like, the SCP Foundation, as a collaborative writing project, has done very well to distance itself from the shitheads of the older community.
Yeah.
There was a bit of a tizzy that we're not going to fucking get into, but, like, there was a bit of a tizzy that was just like, hey, we support Pride and gay people and whatnot. And there were a lot of old internet heads who were very upset about that. And nowadays, nobody cares because it turns out people are actually cool with gay people when they're cool people. Who would have guessed?
Yeah.
But to get back to it, like you said, I do very much agree that the earlier SCPs do kind of have that, like, they have an edge to them that isn't always good. Sometimes it's just edgy.
Mm-hmm.
But I do also kind of want to say that, like, I think that a lot of the three-digit SCPs are iconic. That era is extremely iconic for good reason. They're, like, for as many, you know, just kind of dumb, edgy ones as there are, there's also just a significant amount that are really deeply well-written and mm-hmm. really add to the facility.
Yeah, I don't want to get it wrong. I did also want to mention that in the early days, there are a good number of SCPs that are just essentially author self-inserts or OCs. Nowadays, those are regulated to more of the agents and doctors within the Foundation.
Yeah.
But you'd have things like the like Seder girl, who is a Seder girl who is Catholic, and she doesn't really do much else. Like, that's one of the SCPs where it's like, this doesn't feel shocking or horrific or scary or really thought-provoking. It's just a girl. This is like a DeviantArt profile. Fucking, I've seen this on the Roblox RP threads. I was like 10 when I went on there, okay? Don't ask. But nowadays, like I said, they are more present in the doctors. The Foundation itself has a lot of characters, and that was a very gradual process over time. As in the start, it was way much more about just the SCPs, and the Foundation was a faceless beast. But nowadays, they have a whole load of things outside of the SCPs. There were some, like, notable named doctors early on that became widespread canon. The most notable is Dr. Bright, who I believe is, like, a lich tied to an amulet, but is also just, like, a lot of the early SCPs when they have to mention a, like, important figure within the SCP organization, they mention Dr. Bright. Dr. Bright, I think, also just canonically has a bunch of anomalies in their office. There's also Dr. King, who is always connected to apples and apple seeds. There's a few others I want to mention, like Dr. Sikulski, who is the schemer, the con man. Some of my favorite, like, stories, like, tales, are about Dr. Sikulski doing, like, heists and stuff. He has the password storyline, which is a whole thing of him trying to con all these, like, other groups that are against the Foundation. And I also want to shout out Dr. Weddle, who is the unluckiest man in the world. Dr. Hishikaku, which is like a tech bro who is always blamed whenever something scientific comes up, and usually he's actually at fault. Whenever like SCP research into just like computers goes awry, like an AI goes rogue that they've developed, it's like, Hishikaku, what the fuck, dude? I want to shout out Placeholder McDoctorate, who we'll talk about in one of the later episodes, but Placeholder is both a author and a character, one of the most direct self-insert characters. And Placeholder just really likes to fuck up realities and jump ship to another one. We'll get to the cosmology and all of that in a bit. And then I wanted to shout out Dr. Deerling and Dr. Deerling, who are brothers, and one of them dies in every timeline.
I don't remember the name of the doctor, but I know that there is one of the other doctors that I know of is one who is banned from doing like 100 different bespoke things.
Yeah.
It's like Dr. Light, not Dr. Bright.
It's not Dr. Bright? I thought there was a things Dr. Bright's not allowed to do.
I think it might be Dr. Bright then.
Yeah. So this was a common list on the internet. I remember things Mr. Munch is not allowed to do, which was a bit of like tabletop role-playing game bits that a guy isn't allowed to do anymore. And it's a lot of it is just like funny one-offs that are like things you wouldn't have to ban unless somebody does it. I've seen a few other variants for that across my time on the internet, but it was a much older sort of format. The Foundation, though, so I mentioned some of the doctors, but it does have a big canonical structure that is well described on the wiki and very developed.
Yeah, it has bureaucracy, which any good fiction does.
So you'll definitely read about the Overseer Council, or the O5s. These are the highest of the highest. Usually they can't be perceived or discussed, or like, they have a lot of protection around them and security that most other people in the canon do not.
Yeah.
Most things in the canon cannot touch the Overseers. The status of who is and isn't an Overseer is very complicated, and they're never given actual names. They're just the Overseers. There is an Ethics Committee, which you would think is surprising.
Yeah, the Ethics Committee is deeply fun because part of the lore, part of the, like, explanation, essentially, is like, okay, you are a facility, you are a foundation that has, say, an item that needs a baby sacrifice every day or else the end of the world will occur. How do you do that ethically?
Well, you make robot babies.
Obviously. But what if that doesn't work and then Dr. Bright gets put in a brass bowl?
Under the Overseer Council, we tend to see different sites, which are locations around the world with SCPs in them. A lot of times these sites will have like actual consistency to them. A site is dedicated to a project or a type of SCP. Like there's an underwater prison that is near this giant sea serpent SCP, but they use that to house other beings that they don't want on other, like, actual land masses.
Yeah.
Or Lake Huron in Canada is a site that has, like, kind of like Wendigos swimming around in there, which are natural protectors, and as long as the Foundation doesn't fuck with the lake, they won't get attacked. But those like Wendigo creatures act as really good defenses for the Foundation.
Yeah.
This is, of course, where they put all their waste, so it's very prone to leaking into the lake. The geniuses at the SCP Foundation.
Smartest SCP Foundation member.
Yeah. The sites will have site directors, and under them are the more higher-ranking doctors and agents. And then below them are just like the normal researchers and workers. And then below them are the D-class.
The D-class.
D-class are usually criminals who are in death row, and the D-class die.
A lot.
Yeah, that's kind of the whole point.
I mean, admittedly, there's a lot of people who do die. One of the things that did strike me, without getting into specifics for any specific spoilers, is how often not only D-class die, that's kind of their point, but also, like, task force members and sometimes even, like, doctors and researchers.
Oh, yeah. There are, like, there are mobile task force, which are usually made to combat either an SCP in particular, a type of SCP, or a group of interest. The groups of interests are fun. These are, like, the villains, the villain organizations.
Yeah.
The most famous ones are, like, the Serpent's Hand, which is a cult, the Machinists, which are, they worship an ancient machine god.
I want to shout out the Nine-Tailed Fox, who appear in multiple of the video games as essentially a counter-mobile task force.
Mm-hmm. There's the Wanderer's Library, which contains other libraries, and they like to hold things just for the purpose of having knowledge, which often means they are in competition with the Foundation. And there are some groups of interest that are neutral, ultimately. My favorite is both a group and a person, which is Dotto, who is a guy who is like a serial entrepreneur, but all his things he does end up being really anomalous, like a fast food chain that delivers your food before you order it, which means that like people will just randomly get burgers and fries that taste kind of off. And then, like, later they'll find a fast food restaurant with a kiosk.
Yeah.
And they have to order something there. Dotto's great because all of his, like, conversations or, like, all the things he says to the Foundation are in, like, handwritten notes written in Comic Sans and, like, deep fried. Very great, like, shitposty.
Yeah. My favorite of the Dottos is the boner pills that make you old.
Mm-hmm.
And also very horny.
And they also, I think, create tubs on beaches.
God.
It's just like a Cialis commercial, you know, with the people on the beach in separate bathtubs. Why are they in separate bathtubs? What happened to their marriage?
Separate bedrooms, separate bathtubs, separate dining rooms. We're going to divide this house in half.
Yeah. There's a few, like, other key words to keep in mind, I think. A lot of SCPs use very dumb terminology. And by dumb, I mean, like, some of it is clever. A lot of it's based in, like, root words and stuff that makes sense when you read it, but doesn't make sense when you first read it. Like, the noosphere, which is the realm containing all possible thoughts that humans could have, ever have had, and will have. If something's not in the noosphere, it means it can never be thought of. Ever by anyone. There are beings outside of the noosphere. There's also, like, cognitohazards.
Cognitohazard is probably one of the best terms. It is a hazardous thing that literally just by knowing it, it has some kind of power over you. Or, like, the horror is literally just knowing this thing, essentially.
Yeah, knowing it or seeing it. There's, like, a burger floating in the woods. And if you see it, you are forced to construct around it a setting in which a burger would be expected to be. And, like, the image they have for it on the wiki page for it is, like, warped and blurred to remove the cognitohazardous effects. You'll also hear anestics, the M is silent, to counter these cognitohazards. Anestics make you forget.
Yeah.
Not to be confused with nestics, which make you remember. But I think the most important thing to keep in mind are the classes. This is in the header of every single SCP is, like, along with the name and an image, you'll have classes. So there are three classes that determine how hard it is to contain something. There's safe, which means you don't have to worry about it. Euclid, which is kind of hard to contain reliably, but not actively breaking out. Sometimes these are things that just sort of briefly warp reality around it or are easy to miss. And then there's Keter, which are nearly impossible to contain, or almost impossible to contain. But they can be contained, they're just very hard. Now, normally these are associated with danger. Like, usually the Keter class ones are more dangerous than the Euclid ones. That's not always the case, but, like, in sort of common usage, you'll find that to be a trend. Like, the statue is... Actually, the statue might have been Euclid. I don't remember. But the danger is more so in the secondary classes, which you'll see, like, Keter this or Euclid this. There's Thaumiel, which are SCPs that are used to hold other SCPs or contain other SCPs. There's a really fun site that is just, like, bad matchups, essentially. It's like SCPs where together they contain each other. There was one for 173 where, like, there's a statue or something that when it's broken, it creates a copy of itself, and it looks at you. And so it's always looking at 173, and 173 breaks it, but then a new one's created immediately to look at 173 again. There is Apollyon, Soul of Apollyon, which are SCPs that will probably just cause the world to end, and also they are just extremely dangerous outside of that, and pretty much impossible to be contained. Yeah, they'll usually just cause the end of the world or something equivalent. There's Archon, which are kind of the opposite. They're nearly impossible to contain and are either normal enough or, like, important enough for reality to exist that they shouldn't be contained, or they're beneficial. There are some SCPs that are, like, guardians, essentially. There's the Universal Watcher who, like, stands at the edge of the universe and points at things. It's like that. I'm pointing at that. That's dangerous. That one's Archon. And then there's Ticonderoga, which are things that are just not only they don't need to be contained, but they also can't be contained. And that's not due to, like, them escaping. It's just due to the knowledge of how to contain them being impossible. A lot of these are also things that are, like, in space, for example, and you can't really get to them.
Oh, like cars. Like, from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Yeah, like cars from JoJo's. I thought you meant cars from the movie Cars, which are pretty anomalous if you ask me.
Do you think that there's spaceships in cars that, like, hang on, wait, but how would they breathe in space? We need to get the SCP Foundation on this. Anyway.
Yeah, so I want to do, I want to read the object class FAQ here, which has the locked box test. This is directly from the page on object classes. If you lock it in a box, leave it alone, and nothing bad will happen, then it's probably safe. If you lock it in a box, leave it alone, and you're not entirely sure what will happen, then it's probably Euclid. If you lock it in a box, leave it alone, and it easily escapes, then it's probably Keter. If it is the box, then it's probably Thaumiel. So that's fun, that's a good way to explain it. And again, it doesn't necessarily mean danger, but for the most part, if something is Keter, it's probably dangerous.
Yeah, the vast majority of the most dangerous ones are Keter class, so it's kind of shorthand.
Yeah, I think there are some, like, there are some who are essentially, like, they are technically contained, but they could break out of containment if they want to, which means they are Keter, even though they're, like, pacifist and nice. There's God, and there's, like, 50 gods. There's a whole lot of gods.
Yeah.
There's Cain and Abel, by the way, just if you were wondering. These are things we cut out earlier. Because
then there's also Mom, I think. And then there's the devil. And then there's... I don't know any other Binding of Isaac references I can make.
Oh, yeah. There's Maggie.
There's Maggie.
Magdalene. There's Soul of Apollyon. There's Bethany or Befica. Yeah. So those are some of the terms you'll need to keep in mind when talking about SCPs or when reading SCPs, because, again, they can be very confusing. Even then, they will use scientific mumbo-jumbo jargon as much as they want and can, because I think a big part of SCPs is the unknowability. One of the big features of SCPs are redactions.
Yes.
You are always presented the SCP Wiki as if it was an internal site only accessible to Foundation members. And so anything you are reading is put through a level of security clearance. And there are several articles where there are parts redacted because you do not have the clearance. Some where the parts are redacted because knowing them would be harmful. And then the redactions themselves could either be in the form of the word redacted or a very big black box. More of a typical, like, government file redaction.
Yeah, like somebody's taken a marker.
Yeah. If you look at any, like, declassified NSA or FBI documents that have been declassified to the public, you'll probably see that type of thing. These are very common and has kind of become a staple of any of this sort of bureaucratic horror media.
It's
kind of like the holy tape when you think about it.
So would we like to talk about just briefly some of the SCPs that we enjoy? We're going to get a little more in depth with some of the other SCPs, but I do want to just, like, shout out a couple of specific storylines and such that I do enjoy.
Yeah. So really quick, a big part of SCP content online is just reading the pages for SCPs.
Yep.
Sometimes dramatically, sometimes with very little added to it. We're not really going to be doing that, partially because we don't have the time, and partially because some of these SCPs can be very wordy. And there's a lot we want to shout out without specifically reading them. I have chosen one in particular to actually read on the podcast to give the listeners a complete view of what an SCP is. However, there are others we're going to talk about more in depth. Whoops, I accidentally hit cut on my notes. That will be unread in its full and more just, like, spark noted.
Yeah.
But beyond that, we have the good ones, quote unquote, that will not be appearing in this episode, which are the toaster that makes you think you are the toaster.
The can opener that opens a can of whatever you have, and whatever you open has, like, I think a 50% chance to be live. Like, if you open a can of sardines, it'll literally open up a whole can of live sardines. And yes, if you open up, like, buffalo or whatever, it will try to expel a real-ass buffalo from that can. It's dangerous in that specific scenario, in fact.
the Infinite IKEA, where the employees come to life and try to kill you at night.
The stairwell that you descend further and further, and sometime between like 30 minutes and 6 months or some shit, a face without eyes, nose, or mouth will look at you, kill you, and I believe fuck up any like recording software as well.
The bodies in the water. You do not recognize the bodies in the water.
Dear God. I don't actually know.
It's
that
a
one.
Dear God. I don't know what you want.
Yeah, it's dear. It's the fucking, it's the guy from Spooky's House of Jump Scares.
8888, which is the eight ball that will create a simulated version of reality to answer the outcome of your question. It is also the longest heist that Sikorsky pulls off, and it's beautiful. Please read it. It's one of the best works of fiction on the website. Let's see, we got the Sopranos DVD.
The Sopranos DVD is great. It's a DVD of like the fourth season of The Sopranos, I want to say.
Something like that.
But you can pause it and then use the remote to go into the television on in, like that is currently playing and then explore that show. And it just keeps going deeper and deeper.
Yeah, you can move the camera anywhere within New York and you can also explore further TV shows. Pattern Screamers, which are one of the weirdest things in the like greater outer cosmology of the SCP Foundation, because like they exist where there's nothing and they are patterns and they scream because they are in pain. They're fucking weird. There's no SCP-000. That's the place where Pattern Screamers go.
That's like the Quarter Folk from Monument.
They're Mythos. Like Quarter Folk, yeah.
There's a facility under Yellowstone that if you hit it, it will reboot reality and print a whole bunch of new people. Like, it'll just reprint a bunch of new people for an entirely new reality. And just so you're, just in case you're worried, don't worry. This has happened before. Multiple times, in fact, usually because some kind of world-ending scenario happened and somebody was like, well, hit the reset button, I guess.
The Red Reality, which is a pocket universe with a lower amount of reality than reality. There's something called like a Hume level, which is their term for like how real a reality is, and the Red Reality is less real than reality.
I believe that one also pops up in a couple of other SCPs.
Yeah. There's the Ghost Ship, which is a ship composed of the parts of other ghost ships that have been sort of had ship of Theseus into the main ship as a giant, like, combined ship, and also the crew becomes part of the ship. Inside, which is inside, and it determines whether something is inside or outside, or something goes inside or goes outside. Yeah, it's exactly what it sounds like.
It's just the, it's a fucking plane of inside.
It's not even a plane, it just makes something inside. Yeah, it makes a D-class inside in the article, in their experiment log.
The Scarlet King in the Associated Story is one of the early ones that has to do with, like, ooh, child death. But it's probably one of the more interesting ones as well. It's one of the ones that uses redacted for the horror, because, like, there's one surviving member of a flight of seven children. And they're probably doing horrible things to her or else the world ends.
There's the Y message, which is just a seemingly normal like ghost message, but it turns into a story about a timeline where the SCP Foundation decided to kill everyone.
Yeah.
There's one that you cannot talk about, so the page for it is entirely in symbols.
There's a SCP-999 who's a little slime ball who's great. He's just a fun little guy and everybody loves him.
There's the Where Is My Son Rubik's Cube, which is a Rubik's Cube where every pattern of faces is a different, like, word or phrase, and it asks where its son is. It's really depressing.
Speaking of depressing ones, the last one that I want to shout out personally is a small child who communicates only through sign language, but when placed in a room with somebody whose child died or had a child, will, like, speak their last words as if they are the child. They aren't. And, like, the child themselves, literally, there's logs where they're signing, like, what did you expect to get from this? You're not talking to your son, you idiot. I fucking hate it here.
And then the last one I want to shout out is the spot in, like, a nature preserve where, due to the layout of flora and fauna, it is in complete silence.
I actually didn't know about that one.
That
That's
one
cool.
is sick. It's, like, the branches and leaves in any animals nearby automatically form a field of complete soundproofing.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I wanna fucking live there, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, SCPs tend to branch into, like,
branch? Like the trees?
They tend to branch into sort of the realm of cosmic horror and sci-fi a lot. Though the one I'm describing is kind of less of either. This is the one I wanted to read off in its totality. It's less cosmic horror and less sci-fi and more of just gothic horror, almost. It's about a monster.
Yeah, it's about a guy who's a monster.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's about a guy. I don't know if they use a gender for this, if this has been assigned, but...
I want to say it's he, him. I want to say that... we're talking about 682, for those who know the...
I was too afraid of 8.
God damn it.
I know, I messed up, like, the targets and all of it.
Point being, I want to say that 682 is primarily described with he, him pronouns. Could be wrong on that, and, you know, I would apologize to him, but he does want to kill all humanity.
Yeah, so 682 is, other than 173, I feel like the second most, like, canonical SCP.
Yes.
682 makes a lot of guest appearances in other SCPs as, like, hey, we're gonna see how this interacts with this guy. That's because 682 is Keter, which means that it is extremely hard to contain, and they've tried a lot of things to contain it, and not many of them work, as you'll soon learn. So, SCP-682 presented for the class, for the, 0 o'clock a.m. club? Object class, Keter. Special containment procedures. SCP-682 must be destroyed as soon as possible. At this time, no means available to SCP teams are capable of destroying SCP-682, only able to cause massive physical damage. SCP-682 should be contained within a 5-meter by 5-meter by 5-meter chamber with 25-centimeter reinforced acid-resistant steel plate lining all inside surfaces. The containment chamber should be filled with hydrochloric acid until 682 is submerged and incapacitated. Any attempts of 682 to move, speak, or breach containment should be reacted to quickly and with full force as called for by the circumstances. Personnel are forbidden to speak to SCP-682 for fear of provoking a rage state. All unauthorized personnel attempting to communicate to SCP-682 will be restrained and removed by force. Due to its frequent attempts at containment breach, difficulty of containment and incapacitation, and high threat of Foundation exposure, SCP-682 is to be contained in site, redacted. The Foundation will use the best of its resources to maintain all land within 50 kilometers clear of human development.
Description: SCP-682 is a large, vaguely reptile-like creature of unknown origin. It appears to be extremely intelligent and was observed to engage in complex communication with SCP-079 during their limited time of exposure. SCP-682 appears to have a hatred of all life, which it has expressed in several interviews during containment. See Addendum 682-B. 682 has always been observed to have extremely high strength, speed, and reflexes, though exact levels vary with its forms. SCP-682's physical body grows in size and changes very quickly, growing or decreasing in size as it consumes or sheds material. SCP-682 gains energy from anything it ingests, inorganic or organic. Digestion seems to be aided by a set of filtering gills inside of SCP-682's nostrils, which are able to remove usable matter from any liquid solution, enabling it to constantly regenerate from the acid it is contained in. SCP-682's regenerative capabilities and resilience are staggering, and SCP-682 has been seen moving and speaking with its body 87% destroyed or rotted. In case of containment breach, SCP-682 is to be tracked and recaptured by all available mobile task forces, and no teams with fewer than 7 members are cleared to engage it. To date, and the date is redacted, attempted breaches have numbered at 17, while successful breaches had numbered at 6. See Addendum 682-D.
Addendum 682-B. Portion of recorded transcript of... Begin log. Skip to 0 hours, 21 minutes, 52 seconds. Doctor... Now, why did you kill all those farmers?
SCP-682. No verbal communication.
If you don't talk now, we will remove you from this attempt and place you back into...
SCP-682, incomprehensible.
Pardon? Motions to move the microphone closer.
682 is incomprehensible again.
Speak up to personnel D-085. Move the mic up closer.
SCP-682. They were incomprehensible.
To personnel D085, that microphone only has so much gain. Move it closer to it. This is what I say, by the way, to Galen when we're recording.
Personnel D085. His throat's messed up, man. Look at it. He ain't talk. Gasp and scream. SCP-682, appearing to assault D085's body.
They were disgusting.
Retreats from the room. And log.
Exit pursued by bear.
Addendum 682D. Breaches with SCP-682. Now that sounds like a fun TV show. First occurrence. Brant, brant, brant. Handled by Agent Brant. Agent Brant. Agent Brant. Killed in action. Personnel D129 killed in action. Personnel D027 killed in action. Personnel D173 killed in action. Personnel D200 killed in action. Personnel D193 killed in action. 2. Second occurrence. Another redacted date. Handled by Agent Brant and Agent Brant and Dr. Brant and then several D. And essentially it goes on like this with many, many occurrences. 6 occurrences, actually. Handled by various agents, most of which are killed, as well as several D class who are all killed. Addendum 682E. Termination options. Log of event 682E18. Dr. Brant attempts to use SCP-409 on SCP-682. General Brant and Dr. Brant observing. For reference, SCP-409.
SCP-409 is a gray goo-like crystal. Gray goo being a sci-fi thing where, like, if a gray goo touches anything, it becomes more gray goo. It's a, you know, a world-ending event. SCP-409 is a crystal that will, when touching anything, turn it into more of the crystal, harden, shatter, and spray out a whole bunch of those shatters across the entire area, at which point it will begin the process again.
Yeah. So, I just want to clarify really quick, breaking out of the read-through, but 409 is only linked by, like, its name as it would be on a wiki page. This is, I think, a big appeal of using the wiki as a type of, like, hypertext fiction, is that it plays into the desire for wiki readers to, like, open new tabs of articles by hiding some of the info for the other SCP in its own entry. It both is realistic, because why would you need to include all that on this entry for 682? You could just link to the 409 entry. And also, it adds to the story time element of, like, digging through the archives, you know.
One of the fun things as well is that there's a whole lot of hyperlinks, and sometimes, if you're very lucky, if you're a very good boy, a redacted section will have a hyperlink, as if you get to click that and then see the, you know, the actual event that occurred.
Yeah, the 682B transcript actually had a redacted hyperlink.
And I want to say that it, like, goes to a, like, MP3 file.
Yeah.
So it might actually be a transcript you can listen to, although I did not in preparation for this.
So anyways, termination E18 file. At 0400, exposure, SCP-682 began to tear at the point of contact, causing massive trauma to the area. SCP-682 requests several times to know what it has been exposed to. 0800, crystallization begins, spreading much slower than normal. 1200, SCP-682 shows signs of extreme pain and begins having seizures. 1300. Crystallization stops at 62% conversion. Crystallized area explodes, causing massive physical trauma to 682. 1400. 682 recovers from exposure, despite the loss of limbs and organs. 682 begins regeneration, stating that it will attempt to kill and consume all staff involved in Event 682-E18. SCP-682 appears to now be immune to SCP-409. Use of other SCP items to terminate SCP-682 must now first be tested on samples of 682 before full-scale testing. In accordance with Dr. Brant recommendations, see Document 27B-6, Dr. Brant and Dr. Brant have requested permission to attempt the termination of 682 using SCP-689. The request is currently pending approval from the Brant. I don't know why that has to be blacked out, come on. It has also been suggested by Dr. Gears to use SCP-182 in an attempt to communicate with 682. SCP-182 has expressed reluctance and refuses to enter the containment sensor of 682 if at all possible. Now for reference, 689 is... 689 is a lot like 173 in that it's another statue that kills you, but this time it kills you when you stop looking at it. Oh, and it, like, it's like it kills you, and then another statue appears above you, and then, like, that can be seen and kill someone else, which creates... That's the one that's kept in 173. Yeah, I was about
to say, isn't that just the one with 173? Yeah. I hired this statue to stare at you.
Yeah, pretty much. And then 182 is a guy that can, like, enter other people's heads. Yeah, and ask people questions in their mind. It's a guy, you know.
So... Now that we're at the end of it, one of the fun things with 682 is that 682 is sort of, I won't say like the main character, the main SCP, but like a lot of the subsequent SCPs specifically deal with how, like, can we use this SCP to kill 682? One of my favorite SCPs that I don't remember the number of is a little girl who will always do what you ask of her 50% correctly. If you ask her to flip a coin on heads, she will get it like exactly 50% of the time, I think. No. The experiment was like they wanted her to flip a coin and have it land on either heads or tails, and it lands literally on its side every single time she does it. And so there's a log where they ask her to kill 682 until it is 200% dead. At which point she nearly succeeds, but then 682 is like, go on, kill me. And she stops and goes, I can't do it. He just said kill me. I won't be able to kill him. I'll only be able to half kill him.
Yeah. One of my favorite, like, SCP-682 adventures is there is a, like, therapy gelatinous cube.
Yeah.
That acts like a puppy.
Yeah, and SCP-999.
Loves people. It loves people and it makes people happy and calm. And 682 is afraid of it.
Yeah.
It doesn't kill SCP-682 because it can't. It's just he's afraid of it because it's the opposite of him. He is rage, and that is love. Just like St. Jimmy.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Well, St. Jimmy is the son of Rage and Love, so yeah. St. Jimmy is the son of SCP-682 and SCP-999.
All right, fan artists, get to work.
All right, rev up those fires.
682 is interesting because, so, it is canonical. It is also kind of... a victim to memehood? I don't want to say flanderized because I kind of hate that term. I feel like flanderization as a term comes from a really disingenuous form of criticism of The Simpsons. I don't need to get into it, but like 682 is commonly known as the hard to kill reptile, but like the farthest reaches of hard to kill has gone so drastic. And I don't want to spoil anything for one of our later episodes, but I'll just spoil that 682 makes a reappearance with one of the wildest feats imaginable. But, like, I almost don't like how unkillable 682 is, in that, like, it has both displayed an amount of immortality and adaptation that seems like it is impossible to do anything to it, yet it is still susceptible to hydrochloric acid. That is, like, its net anti-feat. It kind of jobs.
Yeah, it feels like one of those Pokédex entries where they set it really early, and so they have to have it in all the subsequent games, despite the fact it makes no sense.
But that's not even... Well, I guess for the hydrochloric acid, that's it. But, yeah, it feels like they're like, okay, there's some things you can do. But I feel like if you were to take the common understanding of 682 today and put him in an acid bath... he would just develop acid immunity.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know.
It feels like one of those, like, hard line writing rules of, like, you know, 682 is the unkillable guy. There can never be an SCP that actually finally kills him.
Yeah.
So because of that, it's kind of a spinning your wheels situation.
Mm-hmm.
Which can get boring. I haven't read enough of SCP-682 to, like... You know, he pops up every now and again, but I haven't read enough, like, specific to him to have an opinion one way or another that. But, now that we have kind of gone broad strokes over some things, let us talk about some of our favorite SCPs in a little more detail.
Yes. So, how about you start off?
All right. I love the goddamn pizza box.
Yes!
I fucking love... Okay, so SCP-458 is one of my favorite SCPs. It is a Little Caesar's pizza box. That is an entirely mundane pizza box. However, Whenever a person, or I guess being,
I think it's just
it,
a human.
Whenever a human touches it, the pizza box will immediately spawn a pizza inside of it of the person's, like, preferred, you know, type, style, sauce. It can be any, like, restaurant. It can be homemade. It can have various other, like, it can literally have other materials. Like, it can have, you know, motor oil or whatever on it,
I don't think it can. I think it has to be stuff that is digestible to humans.
That's the thing, is that it does have to be specifically digestible to humans.
And it's not just, like, you choose what your pizza is. It subconsciously draws out, well, it draws out from your subconscious what the ideal pizza for you would be.
Yes. The description says that, like, it is theorized that it has some kind of telecommunicative ability. Like, it has to have some kind of empathy or telepathy to know what your favorite pizza is or know what pizza you specifically want in that moment. But there's, I think, 2 to 3 specific reasons I love it. Number one, it is safe, and it is not only safe, it is literally just in one of the sites. It's like site 9, I think, with a note from one of the doctors that's like, just because we're allowing people to use this for morale does not mean you're allowed to just sit and eat pizza all day. But there's also a section that is lovely because it is a section of other SCP's favorite pizza. And I love it so much. It's so, like, the note is something like, in an effort to, you know, understand the psychology of some SCPs, SCPs with known pizzas have had it, like, displayed. So, like, one of the, like, little girls that are SCPs just wants, like, a small cheese pizza. There's, like, a couple of the other SCPs that are just a guy that also just have some kind of normal pizza. One of my favorites, one of the guys I'm going to be talking about in a moment, is 4999, who's kind of a Grim Reaper guy. I'll explain him after. But he specifically has a note that is, like, it has a specific pizza. And then it notes that he's a Grim Reaper guy. The pizza is not specifically his favorite. It is actually similar to the person he was visiting who was dying. Like, it was similar to pizza that she had with her late husband, which is really sweet.
It's sweet and in character for that SCP.
Yeah, it's really deeply, like, that is one of the things I just specifically love about the Foundation, is, like, you will find, because, like, the process of finding that little note is that it is a footnote on a list that is halfway down the page. You know, like, that is the strength of this kind of collaborative writing, is that, like, you can just get, you know, a single footnote or a single sentence that kind of makes you stop and go, oh.
Yeah, I like the pizza box. It's fun. What would your pizza be? The thing is, you can't just say it because you don't always know what your pizza would be.
That is true. I would say, if I were a betting man, the money that I would bet would be it is either Farachi's Pizza, which is a local chain. If you're ever in St. Louis, go to one of the Farachi's pizzas that are around. They're very good.
You don't need to go to Emo's. Go to Farachi's.
Go to Farachi's. Go to a nice local place.
Emo's. More like Mimo's.
Emo's.
Because it's a bit of a meme. Never go to Fortell's.
Alternatively, it would probably be, as much as I'm going to hate to admit this, a Domino's deep dish with Alfredo sauce, Parmesan Reggiano, and feta cheese, which is probably, by volume, the kind of pizza I've eaten the most of.
Imagine opening the pizza box for any pizza ever, and it's fucking Domino's.
I know, it's deeply embarrassing.
Like, I'm like, oh, mine would be, like, probably a thin crust where the cheese and sauce are blended together with, like, Provel, mascarpone, and feta on top with maybe some goat cheese as well, like pepperoni, ham, bacon, and then you're just like, oh, Domino's, yeah. Fucking, let me call
Hell
them.
Yeah.
Up right
Domino's.
Now. Yo, where my pizza at? I gotta get this pizza box. Yeah. How about you go ahead and explain 4999, because the ones I have left to talk about are really weird.
Yeah, that's fair. So, okay, 4999 is my other favorite that I have brought to the table today. So I described him as a Grim Reaper. He's not. So I believe he's been dubbed as, like, the, like, one to watch over us. He is a guy who only shows up to people who are about to die. More specific than that, though, he only shows up to specific people, which is to say people who, like, there's a list of things that are like, you're more likely to encounter him before you die if you, and it's like, have like military veteran status, have some kind of like degenerative disease or long lasting disease, have a like low social life or like not a lot of people around currently, basically. And the exact description of what he does is he shows up to the person. He offers them a cigarette. If they take it, then he will get himself a cigarette as well and light both. If they don't take it, then he just takes one for himself and lights it. And then he just kind of spends time with them. And it's nice.
Yeah. Like, it's kind of sad, but heartwarming.
Yeah. I describe him as a Grim Reaper because he only shows up, like, I think the upper limit is about an hour before somebody dies, although it's usually much less than that. And yeah, he just, like, comes up, offers a cigarette, and then just kind of sits and smokes with you for a bit before you die.
He just keeps you company.
Yeah.
I love it because the description of, like, who he visits kind of tells a story about him.
Yeah.
Like, I like to, my headcanon is that he is, like, the spirit of a veteran.
Yeah.
Who died due to some degenerative disease, and he wants to find others like him and help keep them company on their deathbed.
Yeah.
That's a headcanon, but, like, I don't know, the details are so specific.
Yeah, it's a very lovely little story. It's also, it's very fun as well, because it's, like, it's another case of, there's a lot of SCPs that are just a guy, or that are just a guy that are unequivocally beneficial to people. And he's kind of a great case of that, of like, well, we would like to contain him, but nobody can predict when he's going to show up next exactly. And he seemingly can't really be contained, because we only know about him in the past tense.
But he's also a friend.
Yeah, he's a friend to you and me.
And that's where the pizza box bit comes in, is like, the description of his pizza being the one belonging to the person he was with means that he is viewing it as a means to comfort the other person still.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It's really, again, deeply sweet. One of the other little things is the only photo that there is. Part of his thing is like, you can't exactly remember his face anytime you see it, but there is a photo of him that has the caption of like, a photograph taken in 1976 by renowned photographer something or other 3 minutes before his death.
Yeah
lovely little bit of writing. I those are my favorite kinds of SCPs more often than not, is like the ones that are either just a guy or just a guy that are actually super cool.
I just remembered, we didn't mention the basketball VHS tape in our list of ones we like.
Oh, shit. Yeah, okay. Very briefly, the VHS tape that is a tape of the, like, a Boston's versus Celtic game in, like,
1990s. Celtics are Boston.
Wait.
You idiot.
I got a basketball
is
fact
it
wrong.
Celtics versus Lakers?
It might have been. I know that Barkley is one of them.
Well, then, yeah.
But the thing is that every time you replay the tape, it does it essentially resets everything, and the people inside slowly start to realize, like, that they are just repeating the same game over and over. And, like, it has this, you know, extensive log report where it's, like, in the first 50, it's actually, like, they just keep doing the game over and over. And there's actually a case where, like, one of them actually beats the other team. Like, the Lakers usually win, but, like, after the, you know, after 50 or so, they just, like, stop playing entirely and start, like, going, okay, what's going on? Why can't we leave? And, like, from there, it just kind of degenerates into, like, there's a point where it becomes, like, just a massive orgy. Mm-hmm. There's a point where it becomes ritualistic sacrifice of the players. There's a point where they try to improvise explosives to get out of the thing. And then the very last tape is that a red light shows up. And then from there, all other data is expunged.
Yep. It's kind of like Love Town. Man, I can't believe they recorded that VHS tape 8 different times, and they gave it to 8 different directors and 8 different animation teams and 8 different times the voice actors had to come in and retake their lines. Wasn't that fucked up? And then they broadcast that on TV for 8 weeks, in August, no less. So anyways, let's go to something completely different. Here's
those are my favorites. Yeah. Let's go to your favorites.
So actually, I want to start with SCP-3333. So a bit of context. Whenever they go to a new generation, they hold a contest for what the zeroth of that generation would be. So SCP-5000-Y, which we mentioned earlier, the Y message, is SCP-5000 because it won the 5000 contest. 3333, I believe, was in the SCP-3000 contest, but did not win, but was still put on the wiki because it's that good. It's a Firewatch tower in a, I believe, Washington forest, like a mountain.
Yeah, it's like a Washington State Park.
Yeah, and it seems pretty normal, except that on the ceiling of this one-story Firewatch tower, there is a hatch. And when you climb up the hatch, it leads to an identical copy of the Firewatch tower. I believe there isn't a door to leave the tower, but it does still look like you're on the first floor, with, like, the ground around you at the same level. And then there's another hatch in that. And climbing through that brings you to an identical copy of the Firewatch Tower. It still looks like you're on the ground floor, but there's no doors to get outside. And so, what do? They decide to send some people up there.
Yep, they send a fucking D-boy up there.
Yeah, and this proceeds for like 100 floors. Eventually, it looks like there's figures on the horizon, some like Hell Valley Sky Trees type shit.
Yeah, God, that was exactly what I was thinking too.
Yeah, but they can't quite make it out, and they can't just like leave the tower, because there's no doors. But even though it's on the ground floor and it looks like it's on the ground floor, but they keep going up and eventually it gets to a floor that has no outside, because it's an infinitely repeating sideways repetition of the Firewatch Tower. Instead of going up, you now go out, sort of Library of Babel style.
Yeah.
Where you do have doors, but the door leads to the door of another Firewatch Tower, which itself has more doors leading to other doors of the Firewatch Tower.
I genuinely would not be surprised if between, like, there's a number of sort of, like, infinite or infinitely recursive SCPs. I wouldn't be surprised at all if, like, Hideo Kojima ever admitted that, like, SCP, like, the stairwell SCP or something was a bit of a inspiration for PT.
Yeah, definitely. So there is another exploration log where they send more people up to this top floor. And what happens is that, like, at some parts, they realize they're being chased by something and they don't know what. They haven't seen any, like, complete figures nearby. And remember, there's no doors to get in. So the ones in the horizon that were thought to just be an illusion couldn't even get inside the doors, even though they're on the ground floor.
Yeah.
Because it looks like there's ground on the same level. And then, like, the body camera footage starts to cut out, and, like, the lamps they brought, because there's no sunlight, start to go out. And then they come back, but they're acting a little off. And the implication is that whatever was in the top floor either, like, brainwashed or possessed or replaced the scientists and the Foundation personnel that went up there. The common reading of 3333 is that it's not just an infinitely repeating weird space, but it's also a trap made to lure the SCP Foundation.
Yeah.
That they knew that they could string them along by having a series of weird hatches, and that whoever created this per se or took advantage of this use that trap in order to be able to control personnel. Like, it's curiosity killed the cat, which is a very common theme, but it's sort of, how could that be used against the Foundation?
Yeah.
That's not explicit, and the exploration log that sort of contains all this shit on the top floor is a bit different than just like, oh, it's going dark, oh, I'm weird now. It's a lot more subtle, I guess, than what I can give it credit for.
Yeah, so very briefly to explain, a lot of the more involved SCPs that have, like, exploration logs or some other kind of logs, if you're very lucky, you will, like, be able to actually click it, and it'll just drop down with, like, a fucking pester log, a chat log of, you know, a text description of whatever the video or whatever they're transcribing is. And 3333 has not only three of those, but also has a fourth one that's like a secret, which means you have to click on like three, then click on another thing, then click on the side tab that actually shows exploration four, which like kind of explains in much more detail what the thing is, what the, like, little monster at the end of the hallway is.
Yeah, there's a lot that will use the web format to sort of fuck around a bit. Oftentimes you'll see this with pages that require access keys, and there's some where you can just put in whatever hell key you want and it'll work, and some where it's just like permission required, and you just click on a thing and it says permission granted. But there are a lot that play around with the formatting in order to hide secrets or expand on the story in some way. There's a lot of times footnotes are important, very House of Leavesy. A lot of times that the, like, different boxes and dropdowns matter a lot, and the way they're constructed matters a lot. There's a lot of numerology.
Yeah, yeah.
I think this sort of goes along with a lot of other web horror media in that it kind of becomes more about the mystery and the puzzle rather than pure horror. A lot of SCPs after the initial run of 1000, or the initial, like, Zeros group, the No Thousands, they kind of have that puzzle story element of, like, the truth about it is hidden away and you have to piece together clues to find it out. And it has definitely given way to a whole cottage industry of SCP explanations. The SCP Declassified subreddit is very helpful if you are interested in figuring out what the intention behind some of these are, because in my opinion, some of these stories are extremely vague and, like, really hard to parse.
I've seen a couple of criticisms or, like, jokes where it's like, you know, the coolest SCP or whatever, and it's just an entire thing of redacted text. And, you know, I'm not going to say, like, it is diminutive to say that that is all the SCP Foundation is, but it doesn't come from nowhere. Like, the vagueness of it is both a strength and a weakness, depending on basically what you want out of a story.
I think, like, I've seen a lot about, like, a lot of SCPs that are their timeline moves backwards to our timeline. And after, like, the third one, it's like, okay, I get it. It's the first thing that they do when they interact with the people in the test log is, like, the last thing they're experiencing.
And yeah.
Sometimes it feels like they're just trying to obfuscate things for the hell of it, but, like, not really putting in enough clues to come to a deduction. I call them puzzle stories because I think a lot of the better ones have enough information that you can piece them together like a puzzle. Whereas, like, there are a lot that are meant to just leave with speculation. The bit about 4999's... No, 499?
No, 4999.
Yeah, the bit about 4999's, like, traits, that's not meant to be a puzzle that you solve. I think that's there to spark interest and imagination. There's a difference, though, between, I think, being vague on purpose and having a logical path to follow that is vague.
Yeah.
I think SCP-3333 does it pretty well. But the last one I really want to talk about, my favorite of all time, I think is the best of these puzzle stories. And it's also the one that is subject to probably the most flanderization and sexification. They made the Radiohead album sexy. This is 2747. As above, so below, or called the image for which is a fake Radiohead cover for a fake Radiohead album called I.O., which is the cover, the album cover is the name of the album over a big black fractal. So 2747 is great because the containment procedure is, like, really super vague, and then it describes something called Lucid Chalice, and it starts to talk about Nera memes and meta context and nested realities of media and meta content, and it's really fun. It talks about pataphysics, which is sort of their SCP fun term for the physics of fiction. This is a term that Placeholder McDoctorate uses a lot in their stories, by the way. Expect to get used to the term pataphysics. So what is 2747, though, is an anti-narrative, a cluster of independent sides, as the article states, that when included to a sufficient extent within the fiction of something, leads to mutual annihilation of the fiction and whatever fiction contains that fiction, usually. I say usually, that's a bit more of a reach, though. It's essentially a list of tropes in memes in metafictional constructs that when all of them or enough of them are in a work, the work explodes. The SCP finds it because people keep talking on message boards about a JRPG that doesn't exist. And they find that there's a lot of these works of fiction that people discuss online, and only some people remember them. It's a very, like, Mandela effect,
yeah.
Or, like, evil farming game type thing. Where, like, people are like, hey, does anyone else remember this? A very common thing, I think, is to ask people on the internet about something from your childhood you forgot. But in this case, it's not just asking, but also, like, discussion of the themes of a work or stuff like that. And they give a list of partial manifestations of 2747. These include a short story called Punto de la Espira, which is a Spanish short story by Gabriel Garcia Marquez about a person sailing to a black mountain. A big, desolate, black-horned mountain, as it says. He has to deliver a gift to someone that's on the mountain, but he dies before getting up to the mountain. Then there is Taitoru, which is a Japanese anime, an anime movie. I also love they give you, like, where the reference to the work was found. So for the Marquez story, it was on the Spanish wiki. And for this one, it's from TV Tropes. And it also lists some of the tropes in it, like despair event horizon, foreshadowing, and what do you mean it wasn't made on drugs? So, you know, SCP Foundation has a link to TV Tropes, and you can go down the TV Tropes hole.
I gotta say, as somebody who basically developed an SCP, like an interest in the SCP Foundation, because I'm somebody who also, as a very young one, as a 10-year-old, scrolled through a lot of spooky TV Tropes pages and imagined something scarier than the actual game itself.
Shoutouts to the reoccurring character, the Drakengard 1 TV Tropes page.
Oh, God.
Bring it back, baby, every year. We gotta have our annual Drakengard 1 TV Tropes page reference. Anyway, so Taitoru is a fake Satoshi Kon movie. Satoshi Kon was the director behind Paprika and Paranoia Agent and what is the Perfect Blue? That's the idol one. Yeah. And Tokyo Godfathers, which I still don't know if it's transphobic or not.
Tell us in the comments below.
Yeah. But Taitoru is about a manga artist trying to make their magnum opus, but like hallucinating the characters and eventually dying. Very House of Leaves. Then there is No Sister of Mine, which is a JRPG for the GameCube that doesn't exist and was discussed on Something Awful, which is pretty funny.
I see why this is your favorite, because it's really funny to hear the phrase the Something Awful forums in the SCP Foundation wiki.
Yeah, but it's like, The description of this fake game, No Sister of Mine, is talking about, like, how bad the battle system is, how bad the dialogue is. Like, this is a full-on kusoge they're talking about, which is, I think, very in character for Something Awful's gaming boards.
Oh, man. Imagine making a piece of fiction that gets unpersoned, and the only existing thing of it left is people being like, oh, that game fucking sucked.
Yeah. The game eventually goes from a quest finding a sister to finding a dark black tome to finding fragments of the tome that people are saying isn't even in the game's code. Then there's a fun one, the Skolopendra Wiki, which is a collaborative fiction wiki of various, like, science fiction type articles about horror, speculative fiction, and weird fiction genres, as the article states. Yeah.
The meta-narrative SCP Foundation.
Pretty much, yeah. It's about, it just is kind of commentating on the SCP wiki in a way, but it's like, it involves a cast of 7 characters traveling between different realms and gathering artifacts that have abnormal properties. One of the items is a 7-sided emblem that is dark black obsidian and has, you know, destruction abilities. And there's also an antagonist that is never shown or named that tries to use the emblem, the obsidian thing, for evil.
I wonder if that's SCP-001.
So then they have the Radiohead album I.O., which was reviewed by various publications like Pitchfork. And it's a 6-track album that it's 34 minutes and 18 seconds. I don't know if that's like another SCP. I haven't bothered to look it up. But they have like a lot of different, it's like remakes of Radiohead songs or like sampled Radiohead songs that are re-recorded and layered with different stuff. I love that one reviewer gave it a 7.0. There's a footnote here where the reviewer says that like the album's post-production was hasty and uncoordinated. There's a cut between the fifth and sixth track that was jarring. There's, like, a lot of weird reverb over Thom Yorke. It's described as having themes of spirals of isolation and inspiration. It uses feedback loops. It is a Radiohead album. References to self-harm through metaphor, not explicitly stated by either the article nor the album. Very unique. You could see how the fractal on the album cover would relate to it.
I was literally about to say, like, that's very fun that it's like, you know, it's not just that it's a cool album cover, but it's thematically relevant to the fake album.
Yeah. Then we have Mavine, or A Treatise on the Metaphysics of Inner Space Travel in the Kingdom of Erikar, whose name is Darkness Made Light and Further Theological Expositions Thereof, which is a novel in which different literary journals and critics have, like, discussed and criticized. But it's, like, a manuscript found in a person's house that was being written alongside with, like, illustrations made in charcoal. And the person writing it is essentially just Zampano.
Yeah, I was about to say, that is literally, like, almost literally just the fucking, just House of Leaves. Yeah. It's just the Navidson record.
But it's about a, it's written in Afrikaans, and it's about a mystic who learns about the structure of the inner workings of the earth, who dreams about a being that is aware that it is a dream entity, and tells the mystic all these secrets, and it's a frame, like, nested narrative, and so, like, it goes through different nested stories, and there's six realms within the earth, and there's, like, the planes of light and sound, and then the planes of cold silence and shadow, and then eventually the dream ends. So that sounds like a fun novel. Here's Ex Lux, which is an interactive novel, which Times Magazine, oh, that's fun, The End, question mark, Time, issue 35, 2008. Time did an article on this, like, interactive novel. It kind of reminds me of S, the J.J. Abrams project, but it's, like, it has six different narrators, or no, it's six characters, there's seven story threads, there's murders involved, the characters end up at a roadside diner where their narratives start to tie together, and the stories within stories start to lead to one single narrative. It's sort of in line with stuff like, I feel like it's meant to be a visual novel, the way they describe interactive text.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like either a visual novel or like a, there's a, god damn it. There's a specific term for not a visual novel, but like a thing that is stylized like a visual novel, but the entire screen is text.
That's hypertext.
Hypertext?
Sort of, yeah. Where, like, sort of, essentially. But also that this Ex-Lux, this interactive fiction, has a character named the Stranger who the characters are trying to find.
But, like, you can also, like, so through describing the various things, you can kind of see the repeating themes. Does it ever explicitly state what those, like, themes that, you know, lead to it are?
It doesn't explicitly state, and there's a reason for that. But you could see that the themes are, like, dark black objects, such as the mountain, the tome, the emblem, looking for a character that isn't there, such as the person who's getting the gift, the sister, the stranger.
The number 7 pops up multiple times.
The number 7 in 6, which is 7-1.
Yes.
As well as, like, being unable to complete something and dying before the end of it. So here's the great part. There's six entries within that. And then we get to Operation Lucid Chalice in Appendix B. Observations and conclusions from Lucid Chalice. Show additional material. Data lost. So, here's the big fucker. So you're reading these and you're following the threads of various tropes that appear within them. And you can probably see, like we said, what we're discussing. They're not explicitly stated, but you can kind of understand what the issue is. What the narrow-memes are. By discussing them, they have summoned 2747 to the SCP universe.
Yeah.
They have a list of seven things where the seventh one is lost. In this case, it's the six, like, testimonials or six descriptions of manifestations, and then the seventh being Lucid Chalice. They have something dark and black, which is the image of the tome of, or the image of the cover of Io, but also, like, redaction boxes.
Yep, yep.
They have an unknown antagonist or unknown character they're trying to find, which is sort of
like
2747 itself.
Yeah.
It's sort of the people who like post about these things. And then also it is implied that they were never able to finish the article because their universe ended before they could finish the article.
Yeah.
The hubris of it is that they have tried to document something that destroys your world by being documented. It's so cool and unique and interesting.
Yeah.
The pataphysics concept is kind of about how, like, fictional realities exist within fictional realities, which exist in other fictional realities. And it's really playing with that here of, like, the JRPG, for example, is itself a fictional universe that has its own greater world. But that universe disappears with 2747.
Yeah.
It's also just, like, I think this is a really cool one because when you get to the data lost part, it's a huge, like, anvil drop on your head. Like, yeah. You're suddenly, oh, no. And I think it works because it is based off of tropes. The TV tropes mention is very intentional to get you to start thinking in tropes. But also, like, because our knowledge of tropes allows us to connect similarities between stories, that is what makes that reveal so effective. That yeah. The reveal that there is nothing means that there is something. It's worth noting that in the article, it does say that that 2747 manifests as an antagonistic object that's completely black. However, many people have decided that this means that in the Foundation timeline, it is like a sexy woman covered in thorns. I don't really understand. I've read the article that people say gave it the, like, Queen of Thorns name. I really don't agree with that, and it just, like, it's one of the weirdest cases, because I think 2747's way more interesting as an unfeeling, uncaring, like,
pseudo-unknowable, yeah.
A force of nature that just so happens to implode when you put the wrong ingredients in the pie.
Yeah, it's you put Chemical X in, you add in the big black mountain or whatever, and it just, like, explodes.
Yeah. I also love that, like, a lot of the stuff it describes could very well be lost media.
Yeah.
Like, a concept album, an old interactive fiction with hypertext elements, an old JRPG that sucks ass, an old novel. Like, these are things where you could totally picture them being a real thing that then got lost. What if the most mysterious song on the internet had mentions of, like, a black figure and looking for someone you can't find?
That's in the uncut version, and all we have is the little residual.
Yeah. And I think it's really well presented, and the numerology isn't just, like, a reference to numbers. Like, I'm not sure if the threes in 3333 have much to do with it beyond threes.
Yeah, I kind of expect that the reason 3333 is it is because, like, it was in the running for 3000, and it was good enough to make it, so it was like, well, you know, let's give it an arc number. Let's give it an interesting number.
But in the 2747 case, having the arc number is part of what makes the story so compelling, because by having an arc number, it doomed itself.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I don't have any other, like, major articles to talk about at the moment.
I also don't really have one. The only comment I have is just that reading through, you know, doing the, like, TV tropes hopping that I did on the SCP Foundation really did make it set in how little I actually know about the SCP Foundation. Like, not just in universe or anything, but just, like, you know, we're at 8,000 now. I didn't realize we were at space outside of a couple of specific things, but, like, one of the 8,000 ones is, like, a planet that had an SCP Foundation-like thing, and then had, like, very similar world-ending scenarios happen all at the same time, such that the entire planet is now just, like, a graveyard with literally six things on it.
Yeah. Something similar is supposed to be the origin for Pattern Screamers.
There's
so many stories on there, and it's easy to get lost, but I think that's part of the fun, is following the trail and following links and, like, piecing together a greater cohesion and a greater sense of, like, knowing what the world is. by looking at all of these articles, because the SCP Foundation kind of is and isn't a complete canon. Oftentimes, individual authors will have their own canon unique to them, or there'll be like a storyline that has a canon, with most of the foundations within that like timeline being the same thing with the same things. Like, 682 appears a lot, and it might not be the 682 from the same timeline. Think of it like Rick C-137. There's always a Morty. There's always a 682, but it's not the same Morty, but it is Morty. But that kind of also just leads to these options where you could have a story where the world ends and it's fine, it's canonical.
I mean, yeah, literally, like I mentioned earlier, literally the world has ended before and the reset button has been pressed, and we know it because of like leftover journals and stuff. So like, yeah, you can pretty easily be like, this is something that happened in a timeline.
It also means that like literally any piece of media that has a spooky foundation could just be grandfathered into being an alternate timeline where the SCP Foundation didn't exist. Like the Bureau of Control from Control. That is heavily based off of the SCP Foundation, and like the way you interact with like the weird items in Control is pretty much the same thing.
Yeah.
But like that also is essentially just another timeline of the SCP Foundation, in that it is part of the greater collaborative writing process of writing about weird shit.
Yeah, that's, like, one of the things that I want to impress is that, like, there are, you know, we've roasted a couple of SCPs, and we've, like, you know, we've talked about how not every article hits, but that's kind of the beauty of collaborative writing, is, like, the SCP Foundation has a pseudo-canon. It has a wiki that has a whole bunch of articles that are all by right of having, you know, by right of it being a collaborative project that ends up actually just getting published in, you know, various flights of thousands, just becomes canon. But there's also a, like, you know, if you consider only the articles on SCP canon, then you are essentially saying that a significant portion of the short stories, or, you know, the things that we will probably be talking about soon to come, are also non-canon. And it feels like, well, that's, you know, that's rude to say, because, like, somebody put a whole lot of fucking time into that one, you know, short story, that one storyline. Somebody spent a whole lot of time writing all of this. And, you know, like, it's the beauty of collaborative writing is that, like, not all of them are going to hit, but you will find ones that hit. You will find things that make you go, oh, that's so good. And just, yeah, it's like the SCP Foundation as a thing that exists in the real world, as a wiki made by people, made by a massive community with, you know, an entire other massive community that makes, like, you know, fan films or video games or what have you, is beautiful. It is lovely. It is quintessentially internet, I would argue.
It's quintessentially internet. It's had a hand in a lot of things. Lethal Company is very SCP inspired, with a lot of the enemies being very close to SCP villains.
Yep.
Things like the mask, the doll, the guy with like antlers.
Yeah, the Bracken.
The Bracken. I've Bracken my neck.
Bracken my neck.
A lot of analog horror has its roots in SCP. The way that analog horror uses, like, corporate speak is very similar to the way SCP uses bureaucratic speak.
I feel like the presence of, like, the X archives or the X files.
Well, to be fair, a lot of it is based off of X files and in Area 51 conspiracy, but I do think SCP Foundation coalesced a lot of those for a more modern crowd.
Yeah.
Backroom stuff is heavily SCP, especially the Kane Pixels.
Yeah, Kane Pixels series. Shout out Kane Pixels Backroom.
That is essentially a Foundation exploration log.
Yeah, SCP Foundation good. Well, SCP Foundation good as a writing project. Yeah. As an entity, they're,
they do protect the world
from devastation.
Yeah.
But they don't unite all peoples within our nation.
Yeah, I do think there are other groups of interest that are better at uniting the peoples within our nation. Like the Ojai Church. But that's not for now. That'll be discussed later.
Or the pill that transes your gender. There is just, I believe that's one of the three digits, is just a pill that makes you the opposite sex.
Hell yeah, let's go.
Based.
I wanted to add this earlier, to touch on an earlier point, but for a long time, I only knew kind of the basic SCP, the 173, 682, the IKEA, the flesh that hates, which we didn't even mention. Because going into that would be too much. But I got into it a lot more this year, and I'm always surprised at the quality of what's there, the, like, interesting themes and topics explored. There's a lot that touch on worries from today, or just interesting concerns about things like the environment, or government overreach, or, like, mysterious deaths and dangers. And it can be funny, it can be depressing, it can be heartwarming. It's really interesting how giving someone the keys to write something that is, like, anything can be very liberating. I think, like, I definitely have a hard time sometimes breaking the notion of fanfiction being cringe and ew, but fanfiction's actually really cool because it lets people skip the boring process of having to explain what dirt looks like in order to tell this really cool story about humans. And in a way, being able to build off of existing SCPs and SCP canon is kind of like writing fan fiction, but you're getting some incredibly cool stuff. What might have just been like Trek fan fiction in the 90s is now being written as SCP, like, canon.
Yeah.
And it does often make me reconsider my notions about fan fiction that are negative.
Like I said, the big thing, the big draw to me is the community aspect, is the collaborative writing aspect. It's like, you know, strip down all of the metafiction of what the SCP Foundation is, and it is just a website, a wiki that is maintained by a group of people and primarily exists through user-submitted content. That's wonderful. Like, that's everything I want from, you know, from most fiction.
Experimental art, for the people, by the people.
Yeah, it's really wonderful.
Yeah. So, thank you for listening to the first of our Spooky Month episodes for this year.
Yes, which is officially being dubbed SCP-tober.
Skiptober.
Skiptober.
They're called Skips, by the way, which is just SCP, but said as a word. So, yeah, it's Skiptober.
Yeah, it's not an initialism, it is an acronym. It's Skip.
With no vowels in it, by
with
the way.
With no vowels.
Skiptober. This is the first episode of Skiptober for this year, and you've been listening to Net Surfer Pro. What do we say? Net Scare Ghost?
Yeah, Net Spooky...
Net Spooky Ghost?
Yeah, Net Spooky Ghost, Net Spooky Boo, I don't know.
Yeah, anyways, you can follow us on any podcasting platform you like. Give us a like, give us a rating, give us a review. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know things you want us to cover, or things you think we might just be interested in. You can also follow us on... We have a YouTube channel now, by the way. So if you're on YouTube or YouTube Music, you can find us on there on NetSurfer Pro.
Hell yeah.
You can also follow us on social media on Twitter at NetSurfer Pro or on Blue Sky at netsurferpro.bluesky.social or Bisky, I guess, .social.
Well, that one's actually an initialism. It's BSKY.
Where you can find teasers on upcoming episodes, including the one that we were going to do, and then we didn't, and we will do it later. But we do teasers and updates if we're having a late episode or what have you. So for updates and information, go there. You can also follow me on social media at Twackaroo on Twitter and twack.bsky.social, T-W-A-K, and then T-W-A-K-A-R-O-O for Twitter, where I tweet out a lot of pinball scores, my thoughts on how I'm doing, thoughts on various things, probably some Duskmorn impressions now that that's out. I also post links to when I go live on my stream on twitch.tv/twack. Coming up in November is going to be Shadowvember, where I play through Shadow the Hedgehog to raise money for the Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation.
Yep, yep.
And the more money you donate, the more times I have to play through Shadow the Hedgehog.
A fate truly worse than death.
Mm-hmm.
As for myself, though, you can find me on TikTok and on Blue Sky at Galen Wilson. That is at GALENWILS0N or .bsky.social for Blue Sky. I post my hot takes and such. Don't follow me on Twitter. I'm going to be deleting it by the time this episode is up. You can also find me on YouTube at The Only Galen on YouTube, where I've actually got a number of scripts complete, and I am hopefully going to be finally filming things, so there should actually be content there.
Hopefully maybe going to be finally filming.
But where there won't be content is my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/machinegunvampire. I might stream one of these days, but, you know, follow Twackaroo first. The Shadow of Ember is always a very fun time.
Well, my Twitch page is just Twack.
Follow Twack on Twackaroo anytime. Anyway, this has been the first episode of Skiptober. I wonder if there's going to be any bad things from saying Skiptober so frequently. Like a Beetlejuice situation.
Hold on. Do you think it's going to be a Beetlejuice situation?
Yeah, like a Beetlejuice situation.
Oh no, oh, you said no. It three times!